Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:04 p.m. and that is Central Time. And today is August 28th. Well, I think there's a couple of different things that are worth talking about today. The first is that China seems to be implementing some more substantive actions to support the property market and the off-balance sheet debt that's sitting with the regional governments. And this has been a long festering issue. And it's coming to a head because there's over half a trillion, well, almost half a trillion dollars worth of bonds need to be refinanced next year. And when you look at the size of the LGFV, I guess, loan and bond markets, it's about $9 trillion. And about 2 trillion of that is in corporate bonds. That's half of the entire corporate bond market for China. And then when you think about that, then when you have just less than half a trillion that needs to be refinanced, well, I think that's going to focus minds pretty quickly. Then you also have the fact that the US Federal Reserve has going to well, they've been raising rates for months already, and they're already at restrictive levels. And what's going to happen when all of these startups that generally have an 18-month financing cycle come back around asking for more money over the second half of 2023 and into the first half of 2024? And they're going to find it much more difficult. So one thing that's worth considering then is that not only are you going to have these smaller companies running into issues, but the kinds of companies that provide them with services will also run into issues. Because one of the big innovations in terms of startups over the course of the last decade has been the speed with which it can be done. You don't have to reinvent the wheel for most of your back office or your middle office. You can go to Amazon Web Services, you can go to Google, you can go to Microsoft, and you can literally buy your entire backend. You don't have to develop your own server farm. You can just slot into one of their cloud services. So that has greatly facilitated the growth of the startup sector. But of course, then you also have the additional problem for those companies. If the smaller companies eventually go out of business, they're going to have a lot of spare rack space. Now, when we think about what's going on in the wider world, well, what happens in China is going to have a knock-on effect in commodities. And then when we think about what's likely in terms of the debt issues in the USA, it's going to have a knock-on effect on the dollar. And then in between, the bigger question is, what kind of countries are going to benefit from this great power competition between China and the USA? Because there will obviously be beneficiaries as the smaller countries tend to play them one off against the other. And then when you think about Europe, well, you've got the war going on in Ukraine. There's an acute need to beef up their military spending. Quite where the money is going to come from hasn't really been answered yet. And continuing to raise taxes doesn't seem like the clearest way to get that done, but it might be unavoidable. And I think that perhaps instead we're going to start to see some of the healthier living type of policies introduced. I saw something over the weekend, for example, saying that in order to treat Alzheimer's, that there's been a new type of therapy completely devoid of the need for drugs, which was that in mice that had been that have Alzheimer's, putting them on an intermittent fasting diet attuned to the circadian rhythm was something that helped to improve their symptoms, and then that would basically transfer into a human as start eating at 7 a.m. in the morning. You can eat the same amount during the day, but you have to stop by 5 p.m. And if that is something that would contribute to a better cognitive function for older people, well, then that would certainly help to reduce costs in the healthcare system, as well as improving the standard of living. Well, let's then look at some of these charts. We can see very clearly that the CSI 300 had rebounded very emphatically, but did not hold it today. Now, I think what this gives us and gives us two important points. The first thing is that there are plenty of people that want to buy China on the potential that there's going to be a much bigger round of stimulus. And I think that instinct is probably correct because whenever China has introduced a raft of measures to support the stock market, they work because it's a command-style economy. And when they say markets should go up, they go up. So when you have the government saying to people, well, banks should be providing additional money, we're going to allow the regional governments to bring their off-balance sheet on balance sheet. We're going to enforce some diligence in terms of what gets money and what doesn't. And we're not going to allow regional governments to go bust. We're going to tell banks that they should be buying stocks. All of those are positive. It's really only in terms of the magnitude of the problem relative to how much assistance is being provided. So we had the big pop on the upside today. It didn't hold because the magnitude of the assistance wasn't large enough to really move the needle. Now it might require approximately about 6 trillion renminbi, or about $1 trillion, in order to really move the needle. And if we start to see those kinds of numbers coming through, then it's quite likely that stock markets in China are going to bottom. And the 3,500 level has been an area of support on two separate occasions over the last 3 years. And then when we think about the H-share index in Hong Kong, it's coming back down to test the 6,000 level. And that was an important failed break down below that level. It has broken the medium-term downtrend. If it can hold 6,000, then I think that would be really quite comforting. Then, when we think about some of the nameplate companies, particularly those that haven't been sanctioned, then BYD is quite oversold in the short term. And the bigger question here is not so much whether they can sell the cars they're producing. It's really about how successful they're going to be in exporting them. But the share is coming back down to test the sequence of higher reaction lows in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So this is an important area where support needs to be found within the next 30 Hong Kong dollars or so. Now let's then pay attention to what's happening with the renminbi, because obviously if China is going to provide a lot of stimulus, well, then it's quite likely that it's going to have a negative effect on the renminbi. And it was weaker in here today. And it's been pausing here around the 7.3 level. But this looks like a fairly orderly consolidation. And more likely than not, we're going to see additional weakness here and strength for the US dollar. China really can't have it both ways. They can't have a very strong currency while also addressing the rather onerous debt issues that reside inside the country. Now let's just stay in Asia for the moment and look at what's happening in Japan. And I think Japan is a very interesting case study. So the Nikkei was up over 500 points, and this has been a fairly orderly consolidation too, and it's continuing to hold the breakout from what was effectively a 2.5 year range. And Japan is the only country that has not abandoned its quantitative easing program, so they're still printing. Now they might have adjusted their yield curve control program so that they are allowing the yield on the 10-year to rise now, and that is up to about 66 basis points. So that's a fairly meaningful move, considering that back in 2019 it was negative. And this is also taking the belly out of the yield curve. So the barbell strategy that worked for a long time isn't going to work any longer. But when we think about what's happening in Japan, well, they've had a dim a, a declining demographic issue for quite a long time already. And the only way to get the economy to grow and to reignite inflationary pressures when your population fell last year by 800,000 people is to try and enhance the individual productivity of the workforce, and then also to supply credit necessary to reignite stimulative or speculative interest. Well, maintaining the quantitative easing program is part of that. And then on top of that, the automation of the economy. It's quite likely that we've seen a large amount of volatility within the shares of the automation companies, like when we think about all of those Japanese robot makers that did quite well a decade ago, and then they've really not gone anywhere for the last decade. It's because China has started building them. Now, China currently is following the trajectory of Japan in that they also have a demographic problem. And South Korea has a lower birth rate than Japan, and China has a lower birth rate than South Korea. And all of those countries are investing heavily in automation. So the cost of robots is declining because China is mass producing them. And on a robot to worker basis, China is now the fourth largest in the world. It overtook the USA a couple of years ago. So they're addressing their demographic issue in that regard. But that's also I think, recognition that they're moving up the value chain. The biggest problem for the debt that you have in China is that it's very concentrated in raw materials, in construction material, and infrastructure. That's not the kind of sector that can easily be automated. Now, obviously, there's construction machinery that can be brought to bear and that improves productivity, but automation in the construction sector and the kinds of things that are get your hands dirty. Well, that's not something that's easily going to be automated. It is a significant issue. And of course, it begs the question, is China going to go the same way as Japan did? Are they going to have a property problem that robs the growth impetus for decades to come? And considering the price of property and the misallocation of capital, it's not an unreasonable question to ask. And of course, there is a moral hazard issue, which is why the Chinese haven't been particularly eager to supply the credit required. But at the same time, they can't tolerate a property crash either. Now, and of course, the magnitude of that potential problem is almost mind-boggling. Considering just how much capacity China has built in terms of smelting, mining, and processing of raw materials. The LME Metals Index is steadying at the lower side of its range, but it's certainly got a bit of work to do. When we think about a large mining company like BHP Billiton, well, it has just about held on here at the lower side of the range, but it is still falling and it's coming back into the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So if it's going to find support, then this is about where that should begin to happen. Now, Fortescue Metals has been making a big noise about hydrogen, but it's an iron ore miner and the share is still pulling backwards. And they lost some senior executives just over the weekend. Now, what's interesting, I think, is that iron ore prices have been fairly stable. Still steadying around the $100 level, and we're in positive territory on Friday, but not going up in an especially dynamic manner. There has been certainly a sequence of higher reaction lows over the last year, and it's a very triangular pattern. That suggests really that when the breakout comes, it's going to be really quite powerful. But it doesn't give us a great clue as to whether that breakout is going to be on the upside or the downside. And I think we should be looking then at the commonality we see in other industrial resources tied to the infrastructure sector. So copper prices are still hovering here as well, sandwiched between the 1,000-day and the 200-day moving averages, and we're fairly quiet in here today. Now, when we think then about what's happening in the wider market, well, in order to have a big commodity bull market, it is almost a precondition that you need a strong, weaker dollar. And the dollar has been resurgent over the last 6 weeks. It's coming right back up now to test the sequence of lower rally highs. Every time it has pushed above the 200-day moving average this year, it has failed. So it's going to have to fail again and do so in a similarly dynamic manner in order to confirm that this downtrend is still underway. We've had a rebound in gold, even as the dollar has been quite steady over the last week. But the rebound hasn't been especially impressive, and it's going to require a substantially weaker dollar in order to confirm a return to clear demand dominance. It is more encouraging that silver prices have done better, but they haven't really gone anywhere for 4 days, and I think there was some support that came in at the lower side of the range. But now we're at the first area of potential resistance in the region of the sequence of lower rally highs. So I still think that this looks like a big first step above the base, but it's got some work to do. And what happens in terms of the trajectory of yields, and what happens in terms of the real yield, is I think going to be a deciding factor for the precious metals. The 10-year treasury was down by about 3 basis points in here today. It has not yet sustained a breakout to new recovery highs. And when we look at the 2-year yield, it had popped above the 5% level last week, and it is holding it, but not in an especially dynamic manner on the upside or indeed on the downside today. And I think that there are a lot of people would be quite happy to capture a 2% yield for 5%, and that's going to create demand. But of course, by creating that demand, it is siphoning money out of other parts of the market. And when we then think about the outlook for Wall Street, well, we've had a really impressive trend higher from the lows back in October. And this has been a fairly orderly consolidation around the 4,500 level. Now, it needs to hold the region of the 200-day moving average, and that's not all that far away. And so far, we've had a fairly orderly consolidation. Investors have not experienced a great deal of profit erosion. Most particularly, what people have learned over the course of the last year is that you really should sit through the big declines because the price will come straight back up again afterwards. And that's a dangerous lesson when trends become inconsistent. So it is important to think about just that there really are only two topics in markets. One is monetary conditions, and the second is the consistency of trends. And the problem at present is that monetary conditions are tight, and there is the potential they may get tighter or stay tight for a prolonged period. And they don't generally stop being tight until there is a well-defined problem, and that usually is associated with an economic contraction. And with the confluence of factors that are coming up on the calendar, where people will have to start paying back their loans for or their student loans, where the cost of rent has been elevated for a long time, where the spending patterns of people are deteriorating because they're tapping out on their credit. So Then the trend of delinquencies on multifamily units is also going upwards. So there are an increasingly large number of issues within the consumer finance sector. And one of the shares that I pay particular attention to is Bread Financial. So it did pop back up above the 200-day moving average, along with lots of the regional banks during the rebound after the Silicon Valley bankruptcy last March. But it is now starting to come back down again, and this is a big provider of store cards. So when you go to a store and they ask you, would you like the store's credit card? It's generally Bread Financial is backing that up. And this isn't a particularly inspiring chart pattern. So I think we're still in a difficult environment overall. And of course, if China does pull the trigger and we do see a big round of new stimulus, well, then that's going to flood the market with liquidity. And we could easily see a breakout to new all-time highs for some of the most over-levered businesses or for those that have been performing best. But that will be completely dependent on the trend of liquidity persisting. So what's happening in China could have really significant global effects. If they go the stimulus route, then it's going to be embracing moral hazard. And they're going to have a bigger problem later. But in the meantime, it would significantly inflate asset prices everywhere else. So what happens there is going to have a big knock-on effect. Of course, there is the alternative that they don't go the stimulus route. They instead go for a deeper process of disinflation within the property markets. Then, if they go that way, and we see a major unwinding of the overvaluation we've seen evolve in Chinese property, well, that will also have a negative knock-on effect for the global economy, which is why I'm paying, and I have been paying particular attention to China in these broadcasts. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.